The Antidote welcomes back John Gold. John, it's been way too long since we last got together.
Yeah, seems like it's been about 4 years.
Actually, I looked it up, and it was exactly 3 years ago when you and your wife, Abby, came for a chat about the band Grapefruit. But tonight, it's going to be all about your solo music. Now, does that mean that you fired Abby?
She's not fired. She's started a new career being a mother, which is a lot more time consuming than the band was. I have a lot of faith in her ability to be a good mom, be a good parent.
You had the craziest idea for recording your new album, Cadillac. Why don't you tell everybody the story?
Right. So one of the issues I have as a artist and creative is that I have kind of a high functioning obsessiveness and a compulsion where once I sit down to record, like, I'll lay down a vocal part 30 times.
Wow.
And even now I'm sitting down to do some mixing and mastering on some other recordings, and I'll do it over and over and over and over again. And this is like really contrary to the way that I experience my faith in God, because with God, you're trying to push through whatever sense thing is in front of you and latch onto something that has direction. I feel like a lot of times with art, especially with really nebulous things like mixing and mastering, I feel like really inspired by writing and singing and performing and producing and all that stuff. But the stuff that is a little more like baking and a little less like cooking is harder for me. So I get stuck on a loop and keep going and going and going and get super obsessive. So I wanted to try something where I did the opposite. And in a way, I believed that it might be possible that to do the opposite would almost have a greater impact on people than my extraordinary and sometimes unnecessary effort. So it was at the end of a work day for the Extreme Tour, and just on a whim, I decided I'm going to go home and I'm going to set a timer for an hour and I'm going to record a song within that time frame. And whatever is there at the end of the hour with a hard cutoff, that's going to be what the song is.
Sounds like a tough deal.
That's the exciting thing. I mean, like, if it's just a human being, it's probably a hard thing. It's hard to explain. Doing it that way puts you in this frantic mode where you have to just completely, fully send it. I think what I was trying to do is just get all of the effort out of the way and just be genuine and heartfelt.
Talking about the album itself, Cadillac is a collection of pretty lengthy songs. I mean, just two of them are under 4 minutes, and one is close to 10 minutes. You enjoy having long stories?
You know, I was riding around with a guy named Ben from Germany, and he pointed out that the songs were really long as well. I hadn't really noticed. It wasn't intentional. I think that it's just something where what I wanted to say took a long time to say correctly. I've never been very good at being short and pithy. You know, it's in Shakespeare, one of his plays, brevity is the soul of wit, said by somebody who then proceeds at not being brief. But yeah, I've never been very good at like wrapping things up into a really neat package and delivering a very succinct message.
Well, one of the somewhat shorter songs on the album is Mouth Like Moses. I suppose that everybody knows that Moses claimed he was a poor speaker. So obviously, that type of song title can't fit with you being a vocalist.
I think it does.
Seriously?
Yeah, when I was a young person, I did some stuff in life that kind of made me freak out when I started talking. And it comes and goes.
Oh, so this still goes on now.
Yeah, It's less frequent. I found that by, you know, surrounding myself with people, I can kind of lean on them a little bit. So I guess the song and all the songs are what I found when I collected them all together was that there was this inner framework of questions in the songs. And I hadn't recognized that until I assembled them finally and was writing all the lyrics out. I realized, oh, each one of these songs is about a specific question that I'm asking God. The Mouth Like Moses song, it was during a time where I was really having this struggle where I'd start to open my mouth and speak, and especially if I wanted to say something that was crucial for somebody. Like I wanted to have the intention of healing them with my words, showing them that they had a friend, and I'd get caught up and wouldn't be able to talk. And that's not something I deal with as much anymore, thankfully. But, you know, even now today, we're talking and I'm having to wrestle with the same thing. But the reason why that applies to everybody is because we're always getting pushed up against things where we have option to either like rely upon our own strength or reach through that tangible thing and latch onto God and let him pull you through. You know, so I think that that's what I was kind of exploring in that song, is just struggling with what happens when your greatest enemy is inside of you, when you're having to wrestle against your own mind and your own heart and your own hands, you know, not necessarily wrestling against desires, but against, you know, I think we all have, you know, Mouth Like Moses. So Moses has like this issue where he's potentially stuttering and has to rely on Aaron. God even says, you'll be like me and Aaron will be like your prophet. That's crazy. Okay, but then Paul also has something where he's constantly pushing up against this sharp thorn. And it may be a constant that we have these things that are encumbering us, mm-hmm. tripping us up. Or it may change, but I think the thing that has to stay the same is just reaching through the pain and suffering or the barrier. Like Paul says, stretch towards the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus.
I get you. I want to dive into my favorite track from Cadillac. Simon Peter, it questions faith when it says, but what's the use of a form of truth denying power within? An empty vessel waiting for life to begin. And then God replies, come to me, my yoke is easy. Without love, you are nothing. What kind of mindset were you in when that song was written?
I wrote that a long time ago, about 10 years ago, actually. And with a lot of songs, the reason why I feel compelled to continue to write music is because they kind of come to me fully formed. Or it'll be like I get shipped a box and I open the box and start pulling the pieces out and start to discover what was in the box the whole time. To me, the most powerful statement from that song is something that should make us all feel a little bit easier. Simon, even you were sleeping. After Jesus ascended, then on the day of Pentecost, Simon Peter stands up and delivers a message inspired by God to 3,000 people, like completely changed the course of their life in that day and were added to their number, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the guy that couldn't keep his eyes open when Jesus was about to get betrayed and dragged off.
True.
And that just makes me feel better.
Because we all have our own shortcomings.
Yeah. But then also there's a call to action at the end, which is, don't let me catch you sleeping. Like, it says to, like, work while it's light, right? Because the night comes when nobody's going to work. I think everybody has a different opportunity presented to them by the Lord. And you just have to try to make the best of what God handed you. It's hard to describe the writing process, and God has done different things with me before. Actually, the album that I was mixing today, it's really unbelievable. I haven't done anything as a solo musician in almost 10 years, and this year, God willing, there'll be three different, you know, releases coming out. Two of them are shorter than Cadillac. But the one I was mixing today, like, all of the songs basically just started with either a phrase or a single chord progression. And what God had me do is sit down and just stream of conscious it. But that's not my normal writing process. My normal writing process is I'll feel it coming. You know how dogs will start to act weird when a storm's on the way?
Mm-hmm.
I feel kind of an electricity in the air. I'm not being literal. It's just a way to look at it. It's kind of like feeling something in your heart, and you know that something's about to happen, and you know that something's about to come. So you kind of sit down and get yourself ready to receive whatever it is. And then when it comes, like, usually it won't come to me with lyrics. It'll come to me kind of with unevolved language, like syllables. It's not really talking. It's more like being syllabic. And then usually from a recording or from remembering what those syllables were, I'll extract this meaning out of it. And I think that God's kind of saturated in all of that process. There are a couple songs on Cadillac that I feel like I had more of a hand in writing. For instance, Mississippi, that one, I sat down to write a song and felt pretty comfortable that I had a hand in writing that. But with Simon Peter and some of the other ones, it's just something where that's the reason I even keep making music. I don't really have any aspirations of, you know, fame or fortune or anything like that. But God keeps giving me these things, and I feel that I'm responsible to hand them over to people. And I know that I've actually, thankfully, after a long period of struggling, started to realize that it's all in his hands, like what he does with that. And I couldn't be happier with that realization, you know? So I think that that's how Simon Peter kind of arrived, was like that. And I feel like I was kind of learning a message from that song when it was even coming to me. So I think that, like, I got convicted by it too. And liberated.
Another song that does deal with faith in Christ is Always, Always, All the Time. And yeah, on that one, you don't raise any questions on the song. Effectively, it's a worship song.
Yeah. It might have been the first worship song I ever wrote. I don't know. I don't know when
now
it started.
Now you get to sing it at church.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Maybe I should pull it out one of these days. I think that with that one, it was just highlighting the unbelievably inconsistent way that we live our lives. Always moving, nowhere to go, always changing.
That's how we work.
Yeah. But the wonderful thing is, like, God's in all of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the cool part. The Fountain of Youth bit, I kind of wrote that on the spot when I was doing the recording. So that had never been a part of the song. So it brought the closure that the song needed, I think, is just bringing it all back to Jesus.
What it's all about.
Right. You know, growing up, being a really worldly person and looking around, even with the privilege that I've had to be a part of, like, the Christian music industry, not as a real participant, but just kind of alongside it doing the Extreme Tour.
Mm-hmm.
There's this thing where it's like everybody's trying to, like, grow up and be strong and have a good business plan. And Jesus keeps saying, be a child. And children don't really think about where they're going to get their next meal. And that's been something that's really compelled me, because I want to be more like that and less like the other.
It sounds like you want to be malleable.
I just want to do whatever he wants me to do. That's the only way I'm ever going to have any joy in my life.
But everything is always centered towards Christ.
I don't think that's true for me. I think I get into a lot of trouble because I make things that are other than the main thing the main thing. But I think deep down, I know who I belong to and where I'm going. And by where I'm going, I mean what I'm striving towards as I walk through the days of my life. A happy ending, even if it ends in being a martyr. It's the happiest ending. You know, that's the peace. We no longer even have to be enslaved to the fear of death with Jesus. It's super cool.
Amen. I'm going to switch into a different song on Son Eden. You bring up a point that a lot of Christians struggle with, and people just in general. When the song says, I see you in the garden, you're naming birds and trees. Why do the sins of my fathers still cling afresh to me? Can that passing down of sins be broken?
I think it is broken in Jesus. That's the only hope we have. You know, I've got a 2.5-year-old, and she's already starting to do things that are damaging to herself, willfully. We all do stuff that hurts us. And the problem is, you know, with a lot of people, they grow up and they are pure, but they willfully do things that they know are going to damage themselves or others, and then they get a taste for it. And they don't just get a taste for it, they get never-ceasing advertisement to seek after, you know, self-pleasuring, which will eventually lead you to the point of exalting yourself as your own God. I don't think I've ever said this to maybe one or two people. I prayed one time, and God showed me that my grandfather had like made a covenant with him about something. And I knew that because of the covenant of my grandfather, I wouldn't have to deal with a certain set of things in life, which blew my mind. But I also know that there's sins that run in my family. You know, I think one that's pretty easy to talk about is addiction. It's on both sides of my family. And then I think mental illness is in both sides of my family. Not depression like I deal with, but some other very nefarious ones. Is there the possibility that God could break the chain? You know, it says that the sins of the fathers will be visited on the children to the second generation. Or is it to the seventh? No, to the second, I think. Yeah, the children's children. I can't remember exactly how many generations it's supposed to be. And that freaked me out for a while because I was like, man, am I going to just keep dealing with the stuff that got handed down to me from my father and his father handed it to him? But after a while of knowing the Lord and walking forward, I started to realize that all you have to do is try to do your best and follow the Lord. You know, he breaks those things down. We don't have the guilt in our blood anymore. In that song, there's the phrase, I don't want to be anything at all, which I think is a powerful statement of identity in Jesus. I'll often say things around other Christians that they think are self-defacing, but not at all. I have a friend, Jerry. We surfed together on the Extreme Tour and went out and led teams together, and I would often say to him, Jerry, I can't trust myself. And he saw that as like a moral failure on my part. It's hard for me to really know what he was thinking. We're very different individuals, and I obviously don't want to ascribe any negativity or guilt to him in any way, but I think he took it like that because he tried to like counsel me to be like, no, man, you got to think differently about it, but I can't trust myself. I can trust Jesus. I can trust Christ in me. I identify as what God has created in me. And that's what I can trust. But I can't trust myself because I know my nature. And I know, you know, what I generate and what I go after. And I've only found liberation from that.
A couple minutes ago, you mentioned about suffering from depression. Is that what brought out the song Mental Illness?
I think I was trying to battle with the idea of, like, is my mental illness, is it my own mind with a chemical imbalance? Or is my mental illness spirits that are trying to impersonate my thoughts? Both of those viewpoints are you know, parallel with different people's understanding of the Bible. And I think that it's really important. Oh, man, dude. Like, every single doctrine, there's somebody saying something opposite.
True enough.
They're all warring over all of these points. And what I found is that there's never any shortage of people going after the thing that they want to hear, which is really sad. Really sad that there's even a market for such bad ideas. But people go after what they want to hear a lot of times. And they want to justify it so much that they find a way to like look at the Bible that justifies it, or to look at God that justifies it. Which isn't a popular viewpoint anymore to point that out, but it's true. So, I mean, with my own mental illness, I deal with really bad depression, and it's on and off. Over the last 2 or 3 years, it's gotten really, really bad. And I don't have an answer for people about what it is. I don't have the answer. I can't choose one or the other. Is it demons? Is it my own brain chemistry? I think the best way that to look at it probably would be that our adversary seeks to steal, kill, and destroy. He doesn't want you to know that you're loved, and he certainly doesn't want you to be like a voice for the powerless, or a voice to like declare things that are positive, good, can bring life. So he wants to shut your mouth. And I think that there are people that have a natural set of tendencies. And when exacerbated, these can turn into anxiety or depression or other things. You know, so I think it might be both. I don't think I'm a good example of fighting it, but I think that it all just boils down to seeking God through the pain and suffering. Like, the verse is, it's in Proverbs, probably 3-something. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean on your own understandings. Don't put weight on your own understandings. In all of your ways, acknowledge him, and he will guide your paths. So what does it mean to acknowledge God in all your ways? It means that no matter what we're dealing with, we have to bring him into that situation. To bring him in is more like us going to him. So that would be my suggestion for anybody that deals with mental illness, is to not accept a narrative from our culture, or a narrative that's reductive of who God is and what he wants to do for you and who he wants to make you into. Don't be in condemnation either, because Elijah was underneath the tree and he was saying to God, it would be better that I should die, when he was running from Ahab's wife. That's when that happened. And that's not the only time that there's a biblical character that's like, it would be better if I was dead right now. So those thoughts happen, but you have to push through them and seek the Lord and realize that it's really necessary for you to be here. God's given you a gift of life, so you have to use it to honor him.
You had mentioned that these songs were written over quite a number of years. You said one was even a decade old. Mm-hmm. Did that make it difficult to give the album continuity?
It's incredible what God did bringing them all together. I recorded them all, you know, every Friday night for 11 consecutive weeks. I did a 1-hour recording of a song. A lot of times I didn't even really practice them beforehand, so the lyrics were more inspired by what I was thinking and feeling in the moment than what I had written originally. And then after I came back from Ireland this year off the mission field, I knew that I had to finish it up. So I sat down and God gave me a different continuity with how to come in and finish everything with subtle, like mixing and mastering things. So I think that I don't know if it'll really come out, if anybody will hear it, but there's this like kind of found footage, tape deck, you know, grittiness, and this kind of like emphasis on making mistakes. Both was something that I had to embrace in the moment when I was actually recording them, but it was also something that like I was able to like find, oh, that's weird. there's something in this song, there's something in that song, and all of them are matching up in this way that I couldn't have planned. It's like the thing where I lined up all the songs and it happened to be 1 hour and 58 seconds. So wow. Like, not only were all of the songs recorded in under 1 hour and 1 minute a piece, when you stack them all together, it's under 1 hour and 1 minute. And also, when I looked at all the titles, it happened, I guess it's okay for me to say this, I kind of wanted people to figure it out themselves, but all of the titles happened to spell Psalm.
And I hadn't picked up on that at all.
Yeah, like when you take the first letter of each one of the titles, it's Psalm. And I couldn't have done any of that stuff. It's not like I got some bright idea where I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this. And that's really going to make people excited. It was more like discovery method. Just like when God hands me a song and it's kind of in a box and I'm pulling it out. And I'm like, I know right when I start going to those syllables that aren't really words, I kind of know what the song's about. And it's a discovery for me. More like uncovering something than writing something. In the same way, every time I've ever recorded an album, it's been more about discovering what God was doing than about like making something profound happen, you know?
I had a great question as to why you closed up Cadillac with the song Mississippi, but now it's just so you could have spelled Psalm. Seriously, though, there must have been a reason for finishing the album with that particular song.
Well, I knew it had to start and end with Preserver and Mississippi. I wasn't sure which one would be first until I finally got to the final stages. And the reason why I struggled about which one was going to go first is I'm not a person who really... How do I say this? I don't condone or endorse profanity, but the song Preserver has profanity in it.
True.
And I prayed about it a lot, whether I should leave it in there. And I just felt that if this album was more for people that didn't know the Lord and were searching than for Christian people, which I felt that it was, then I needed to value being completely honest about the destitute situation that I was in when I was writing that song.
Now I understand.
And I shouldn't scrub it. So I made that decision, and then I felt prompted by the Lord to put that song first, which basically does not make me comfortable at all. Like, I don't want to get in trouble and have to answer the same question over and over again about, like, why did you do this as a Christian? I don't feel comfortable with it at all. It just really feels like what I was supposed to do this time.
Well, I guess I should admit that I'm not going to be airing that song mostly because of that reason.
I can make you an edited version if you ever want. You know, I'm not opposed to that.
Well, you and I have only spoken about a few of the songs found on Cadillac. So where did the Antidote listeners find the rest?
Well, it's going to be released on my birthday, February 16th, 2025. I'll be 35.
As old as all that.
Yeah, I feel like I'm kind of halfway there. By the way, you know, just for the funniness, but I was listening to Creed the other day, and it was like 6 feet from the edge and then 6 feet down. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, I just want to bring that up because it's like 6 feet from the edge, but then the edge is 6 feet down and it's not so far, you know?
Right.
Anyway, you can find it on Bandcamp. I have a website, which is literally a Google form. So if you go to my website, it's got all the links on it. It's a Google form. It's not the best website. Got to fix it someday. But it's on all of the streaming services. And I guess I could say one other thing about that. A month from the release date, I'm going to be releasing an alternate version on Bandcamp for sure, maybe everywhere, which is basically like a tape version to honor my grandmother that just passed away. So, she lived to be 100. So I wanted to do something and release it on the day for memorial service.
But now you haven't told us what your website is.
johngold.org. We're an organization.
Keep it simple. Keep it tight. Keep it memorable. Well, something that is memorable is Cadillac. That's a truly great album, John. You know, even if you did rush it along. So I got to thank you for sharing it with The Antidote.
Thank you. Very kind.